Now, what we're going to talk about this week is something that I find very, very fascinating. I'm excited to talk about it. I hope it will be something that is lemaisa for me in the coming weeks or months or days or something. Who knows? But here we go. Baruch Hashem, as of November 1st, as we know, the government regulations in Eretz Yisrael have changed, and the airports seem to be a little bit more open than they have been over the past many, many months. So many people in our community decided that they're not going to waste any time at all. They're going immediately to purchase a ticket. They're going to book whenever it's appropriate for them to go. And they're very excited, as they should be. Somebody sent me a shaila this week, one of those individuals who decided to book, not just to wait until November 1st. They booked a ticket on October 31st to land in Israel on November 1st, not wasting any time at all. And they are passionately enthusiastic about this trip to Eretz Yisrael that they just went on. As for them, it's a very long overdue trip, and it would be the first time in quite a long time that they have the privilege of visiting Eretz Yisrael once again. The question that they asked was as follows. Would they be allowed to make a bracha of Shehecheyanu when they go to Eretz Yisrael, or when, more particularly, what they were more excited about was to go to the Old City for the first time in a very long time? Would they be allowed to make a bracha of Shehecheyanu when experiencing that very exciting feeling of being back once again in Yerushalayim? Very fascinating question. Let's get into it a little bit and try to understand some of the factors, some of the components that lie behind this very important question. So we begin with the words of the Aderes. The Aderes was the father-in-law of Rav Kook. But it's a little bit cheap to say that he was the father-in-law of Rav Kook. The Aderes was an Adam Gadol Sheba'anakim. He was a great tzaddik and a great Talmud Chacham before Rav Kook came onto the scene. The Aderes' name was Rab Eliyahu David Rabinowitz Teumim. He was a twin. He had a twin brother, so they called them Teumim. And he was the Rav of the town of Panevėžys in Europe for 19 years. He passed away in 1905, and his whole life he wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael. He didn't have the opportunity to go because he had nothing to do there, and he needed a parnasa. And he was the Rav in the town of Mir. He was the Rav in the town of Panevėžys at different junctures of his life, and there was no job opportunity for him in Eretz Yisrael. And then one fine day, he gets an email. One fine day, he gets a telegram, some kind of message from the messengers of Rabbi Shmuel Salant. Rabbi Shmuel Salant was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim. He was getting old. And they asked if the Aderes would consider moving to Yerushalayim to become the assistant chief rabbi. The idea being that Rabbi Shmuel Salant was already nearing 90. And the point was that at some juncture in his life, he was going to retire, and the Aderes would take over the position. That was the dream. That was something that very much excited him. His whole life he wanted to move. Finally, he was offered a job, and he went. So he travels there. It's a very difficult story. I think one or two of his children passed away along the way as he was traveling. It was very dangerous conditions. And he only ended up being the assistant chief rabbi of Yerushalayim for 4 years, because he passed away after 4 years, and Rabbi Shmuel Salant outlived him. So Rabbi Shmuel Salant was a very old man, and the whole point of the Aderes coming was that at some juncture he would take over the position, which actually never happened. He was the father-in-law of Rav Kook, but that also was very short-lived. His daughter, who married Rav Kook, only was alive for 3 years after the marriage happened. And the Aderes was devastated, obviously, over the loss of his daughter, but he was also devastated over the second loss that he was going to suffer, that he wouldn't be related to Rav Kook anymore. And he couldn't fathom that. So he read the Shidduch to Rav Kook with his niece, and he said, at least we'll remain related. So his twin brother's daughter ended up marrying Rav Kook. So he ended up still being not the father-in-law of Rav Kook, but being the shadchan of Rav Kook and being the uncle. And they remained very, very close. The Aderes writes so expressively in so many of his svarim, really just beautifully, the way he talks about his feelings and his emotions. And here, he writes to a friend of his by the name of Rab Mordechai Gimpel Yaffa. I don't know a lot about him, but this was a great Talmud Chacham at the time who was a friend of the Aderes, who was coming to Yerushalayim for the first time. And the Aderes argued that he thinks that it would be appropriate to make a bracha of Shehecheyanu when you come. You're moving from Europe. You're living something that was always a dream, and now it's becoming a reality. How do you not make a Shehecheyanu? So the Talmud Chacham, Rav Gimpel Yaffa, writes back to him, and he says, Gam ani tehila lakel, I have to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I'm very grateful. Kiyamti misvar, he said, I believe that it makes a lot of sense that Shehecheyanu should be recited. V'ulam ki basi be'erev Rosh Hashanah, it happens to be that my trip worked out that I was going to be in Yerushalayim for the first time on Erev Rosh Hashanah, so I decided that we make a Shehecheyanu for the Yomtiv, so I may as well consider that to be the Shehecheyanu on this experience as well. Why go out of my way to make a second bracha? That would be sufficient. Ubeirachti b'simcha, and he says, I was so excited when I got to that Rosh Hashanah. That night I said Kiddush and I said Shehecheyanu. I was just beyond excited. And he says that what I'm doing now by reciting the Shehecheyanu is going not only on the experience of Yom Tov, but also on the very special opportunity that I have to be in Yerushalayim, to be in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, there is a second place where this is spoken about, and that is in the Sefer Eim HaBanim Semecha. That was written by Rabbi Sachar Shlomo Teichtal, who passed away very tragically in 1945. But he has a fascinating life story. He was a great Talmud of the Munkacsa Rebbe. The Munkacsa Rebbe was one of the Gedolim in Hungary, the Minchas Elazar, who was a staunch anti-Zionist in the end of the 1800s, beginning of the 1900s, and he really was fighting this off with all of his might. He did not want people moving to Eretz Yisrael. He thought it was wrong for a number of reasons. And this Rabbi Sacher Shlomo Teichtal was a very close disciple, was a very close Talmud, so much so that in the 1930s, Rav Teichtal wrote an article in the newspaper in Europe where he submitted an article professing the fact that he was a follower of the Minchas Elazar and how terrible Zionism is, and it's really something that none of us should have a part of. He was completely a part of that way of thinking. And then, unfortunately, his life experience made him reconsider. The war broke out, World War II broke out, and he realized that this is all wrong. He realized that the answer to the problem that the Jews are suffering right now in Europe is, if only we had the gift of Eretz Yisrael, and if only we took advantage, we wouldn't be here. And that was something that profoundly changed his entire hashkafa, his entire outlook, so much so that in the end, he published a book in 1943 that has now become a classic called Eim HaBanim Semecha, which is printed both in Hebrew, and it's also now available in English. If you've never gone through it, it's an amazing piece of work. You should go out of your way to read it. And after that was published in 1943, he unfortunately was sent to a concentration camp in 1944-45, and he lost his life in 1945. He was killed by the Nazis. So Rav Teichtal writes in his Sefer Eim HaBanim Semecha, and again, this is his thesis, trying to explain why all of his hashkafa was a mistake, and why he thinks that now at this juncture in history, everybody needs to be excited about the return to Eretz Yisrael, the return to Yerushalayim. It's a beautiful sefer. So there, he writes, and again, this is just in a dream. This is in his imagination. He never thinks it's actually going to happen, that he's going to be able to get there. But he writes, "Ilu lo ha'isi choshesh mechaverai, if I was not embarrassed of my friends, uv'yoser me'rabosai she'echaychu alai, if I wasn't embarrassed of my teachers who would laugh at me, ha'isi omer davar chadash, I would posit the following suggestion, and that is, the same way that the Gemara says in Maseches Sukkah, that somebody who makes a sukkah for themselves, again, we don't have this practice, but the Yerushalmi says that somebody who builds their own sukkah makes a bracha of Shehecheyanu, because it's an exciting mitzvah to be doing. Not just sitting in the sukkah on the first night of sukkahs, but building the sukkah as well is something that is an exciting endeavor for a individual, for a family, and therefore we make a bracha of Shehecheyanu when building the sukkah as well, when doing the construction. Well, says Rav Teichtal, if I take that logic of the Gemara, I would say that when a person goes to Eretz Yisrael and lays the cornerstone foundation of their house, or puts the first shovel in the ground to start working the land because they want to be a farmer, he says, it would make sense to me that you should make a bracha of Shehecheyanu. Amazing. That's what he writes. And he thinks that it makes a lot of sense for a person to consider this a worthy enough reason to make a bracha of Shehecheyanu. You'll argue, he says, that when I make a sukkah, I'm making it for myself. So maybe that's why I make a bracha, because I'm doing it in order to fulfill my own mitzvah. But what about if I'm going to work a farm in Israel and I'm not the one making the money? I'm part of a kibbutz and somebody else is going to make the money, or somebody else is my employer. So would I make a Shehecheyanu as well? He says the bottom line is that the mitzvah of Yishuv Haaretz is to make the land yishuvable. That's the way he says it. To make it livable. And therefore, he says, every part of my involvement in that kind of dream, in that kind of ultimate destiny, is something that is worthy of a bracha. And therefore, he says, this is something that has so much simcha And Tosus writes that when you have a bracha, when you have a mitzvah that involves a lot of simcha, this certainly, he argues, would be something that should be included. He ends off by saying that although he thinks it makes a lot of sense, lo basi ela lahayir, he says, all I'm writing this is not as a psak halacha, I'm writing this just for people to consider, for people to think about it. And he says, obviously I would need, he says, yaskimu iti gedoli adar, I would hope that the great leaders of the generation would agree with me that this is something that is worthy of a bracha av shechiyanu. So very interesting, you have the aderas, you have here Rabbi Sachar Shlomo Teichtal in the Eim HaBanim Simecha. What are the guidelines in Shulchan Aruch to understand when shechiyanu should be recited? When is a person supposed to say shechiyanu, and when perhaps not? So we have two occasions where the Shulchan Aruch outlines the chiyuv, the obligation that we have to recite a bracha av shechiyanu. Number one, the Rambam tells us, and this is quoted lahalach in Shulchan Aruch, exactly verbatim from the Rambam is in Hilchos Brachos, where he says, "Kol mitzvah shehim izman lizman." If I have a mitzvah that only comes around periodically, for example, shofar, sukkah, lulav, mikra megillah, ner chanukah, if I have a mitzvah that comes around only once a year, that would be something that would warrant a shechiyanu. I say, thank you HaKadosh Baruch Hu for bringing me now to this juncture in my life, where I have the opportunity, where I'm healthy enough once again, to blow the shofar, to sit in the sukkah, to shake the lulav, to light the Hanukkah candles. I recite a shechiyanu on a mitzvah that comes around from time to time. Then the Rambam discusses, what about a bris milah? Well, a bris milah doesn't come around that often. The fastest turnaround time that you can have for a bris milah is once every 9 months, if somebody's like really extreme, right? How many baby boys can you have in succession? So you're not going to have a bris more than once a year, usually. It's usually the case. And therefore the Rambam says, maybe I should say that that is also something that would warrant a bracha of shechiyanu. In fact, in Eretz Yisrael, that is what they do. Yes, if you have triplets, you have three, I got it. But that's not relevant to anyone else in the room. So if you have a bris milah, that is a discussion in Shulchan Aruch whether or not you make a shechiyanu, pidin haben. Also, anyway, that is one category. When you have a mitzvah haba mizman lizman. Category number two that is totally unrelated to the first is when the Shulchan Aruch, as quoted from a Gemara Maseches Erevin, tells us that when you see peiros chadashim, when you see a new fruit, and we're all familiar with this from Rosh Hashanah, that we take a new fruit and we make a shechiyanu. That is exciting. Why? Because we realize we made it through a whole nother season, which is part of the discussion today. Is it really relevant anymore when we live in a community where at every time during the year you can get all of these fruits, even when they're out of season, because they're shipped in from other parts of the country, from other parts of the world? So that's a question in general. Does a shechiyanu still make sense when you have seasonal items that come around? Should a shechiyanu still be made? So the Shulchan Aruch says, if I have kelim chadashim, if I have some kind of new article of clothing that I'm very excited about, I make a shechiyanu. My father has pointed out many times that to make a shechiyanu on a new suit, look, most of us don't get that excited when we buy a new article of clothing. We have an entire wardrobe that it's not that, again, it's very nice when you get something new, but you have plenty of other things to wear. It used to be in Europe when somebody had one suit, it was a simcha gedola when they bought a new suit. It was a reason to say shechiyanu. I remember reading a story about Rav Shach, that when he was learning in yeshiva in Europe, he was a poor European boy, and he used to go down to the river to wash his clothing, and he would stand there on the side with no clothing, because he had nothing to change into. So he had to wait until the clothing dried off, until he finished washing them, and then after a couple of hours, he then got dressed again. But he didn't have anything else. So when you think about that kind of reality, yes, a shechiyanu makes a lot of sense. But when that's not really the situation that we have today, how excited are we when we buy a new article of clothing? Again, if you have something, a wedding gown, you bought a gown, you're really excited, it's something that gives people a tremendous sense of excitement. A tuxedo, I don't know, I don't get excited from these things, but there are people who get very excited about such things. So yes, the Shulchan Aruch says that would be category number two, when a shechiyanu would be warranted. Outside of those two specific categories, either a mitzvah haba mizman lizman, or you have a new season where a fruit comes out, or a new article of clothing, would a person ever be allowed to say shechiyanu just because I feel very excited? So for example, I'm making a bar mitzvah for my child, or I'm marrying off a child, or I just had a grandchild. Do I make a bracha of shechiyanu just because I happen to be very excited? Is that something that would be allowed? Is that something that would not be? The truth be told, you look in Shulchan Aruch and it says in Siman Reish Chaf Beis, that al shmuas tovas mevarach shehechiyanu. If I hear something good, so again, I get a phone call that my child is getting engaged. I get a phone call, right? It's official. I get a phone call that we had a grandchild. I get a phone call that something, I hear about something that's very exciting. The Shulchan Aruch says, technically, you'd be allowed to make a bracha of shehechiyanu. Why? Because I'm thanking God for bringing me to the point in my life where I'm able to experience this wonderful occasion in my life experience, in my existence. And that is something that the Shulchan Aruch talks about. However, the Mishnah Berurah there writes that we have the minhag, he quotes on the Prima Gadim and others, not to really do that. Because how do you draw the line? You know, I got into medical school. So, do I make a shehechiyanu? Yeah, but I didn't get into the school that I wanted, but I still got into school. Many people got rejected. I got a residency. I'm very happy. I'm very excited, but it's not the one I wanted. Of course, it's a Shomer Shabbos residency, but it's not the one I wanted. So, I wanted to be somewhere else. I didn't want to move out. They signed the lease. Somebody bought my house. Okay, but it's not at the price that I wanted them to buy it. I was negotiating much higher. Now it turns out I got a buyer who undercut me a little bit. I took what I can get. So I'm excited, but on the other expense, I don't know how excited I am, how excited I should be, how excited I shouldn't be. So that's why the Shulchan Aruch, even though it's true that the Shulchan Aruch does say that when I hear something good, I can make a shehechiyanu that is warranted. But the Mishnah Berurah writes, we don't have the minhag to do that because it's very hard to define. The other two categories are very clearly defined. Either I make a shehechiyanu when I have a mitzvah that comes around infrequently, mizman lezman, once a year on the calendar, or when I have an experience which is something that is seasonal, like a new fruit or a new article of clothing. But here, since this is something that is very hard to define, the Acharonim write that this is generally not the practice. So what would be appropriate in our situation? Somebody is extremely excited to go to Eretz Yisrael, to visit Yerushalayim, as they should be. So what would be the right thing for them to do? So when I discussed this with Rav Asher Weiss, he said that we should follow the position of the Rush. The Rush writes that there's a big machlokas harishonim, what are we supposed to do when it comes to shehechiyanu on the second night of Rosh Hashanah? Are we supposed to recite shehechiyanu or not? And we're all familiar with what we do. We say shehechiyanu on the second night of Rosh Hashanah, but everybody knows that it says in the Rishonim, this is the position of the Maharam Rutenberg, and the Ramah quotes it in Halacha, that we take a new fruit to the table and we make a shehechiyanu on the new fruit. Why? Rosh Hashanah is not important? No. It's not clear whether or not a shehechiyanu is actually warranted on the second night. We don't know whether or not this is what we're supposed to be doing. I've had many people who have come over to me on the first night of Rosh Hashanah and said, okay, which fruit should I make the shehechiyanu on tonight? I said, no, you're missing the boat. The point of the shehechiyanu has nothing to do with the first night. Shehechiyanu the first night we say because it's Yom Tov. Shehechiyanu the second night, we're not sure whether we should say it. So when in doubt, instead of skipping the bracha, we're going to make an excuse of how we could make sure that we're obligated to make the bracha. And in fact, that is what the Kaf HaChaim writes. The Kaf HaChaim was one of the Gedolim of the Sfarda community. A very important Piskei Halacha. And the Kaf HaChaim suggests that when a person goes to Eretz Yisrael, and they're very excited, and they're not sure whether or not they should make a shehechiyanu because is this something that falls into that third category that is nebulous? In that case, the Kaf HaChaim says, why not make sure that you obligate yourself in a shehechiyanu? Buy a new article of clothing that's very exciting. Do something that certainly would warrant a shehechiyanu. Buy a new fruit and eat it. And make a shehechiyanu and have in mind that experience. I remember many times Rav Asher Weiss coming into a shir when I was learning in Israel. And he would come in and say, you know, a new sefer of mine came out this week and I'm very excited. And I'm, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I think a shehechiyanu should be made. But he said, you know, just because I'm excited doesn't mean anybody else is. So I went out and I bought a new talis, a new pair of tzitzis. And I'm making a shehechiyanu on that. And really, I have in mind for my sefer that just came out also, just because I'm not sure exactly whether or not this is what I should do. Again, this is a discussion that many Acharonim have when it comes to a suffix with regard to the bracha of shehechiyanu. Good. Now up to the next part. So this is what we made up. I texted her a much shorter answer than that. But basically what we made up was, it makes sense to buy a new article of clothing. She was very excited to go to Yerushalayim. She said, I'm going to put it on in the taxi on the way to the old city. I'm really excited. I get there. Step out of the taxi, I'm going to make a shehechiyanu. She texts me back about 2 minutes later and says, hey, this is all very nice, but do I also tear kriya? Now, does that make sense? I'm going to make a shehechiyanu at the same time that I'm tearing kriya? That sounds like there couldn't be two more opposing feelings that could collide with each other at the same time. And this, too, is a very fascinating question. The Gemara Maseches Moed Katan Daf Chavav tells us that when you visit Yerushalayim Bechurbana, you're supposed to tear your garments. Now, how do you define Yerushalayim Bechurbana? Would you say today that Jerusalem is in ruins? Or do you say, look how much it's been built up. Look how many thousands of people are living there. Hundreds of thousands. Maybe it's millions. I don't even know. You have tons of people living in Yerushalayim now. How can you say that that is Bechurbana? So what I find very moving is the Avbezdin of Kiryat Motzkin. He was a great tzaddik who lived not too long ago. So in 1967, he writes the following. Biyom Zayin Sivan. Tav Shin Chav Zayin. So Tav Shin Chav Zayin is 1967. Why is it significant? Zayin Sivan Tav Shin Chav Zayin was immediately after the Six-Day War. So now there was full access to Yerushalayim, to the Har HaBayis, something that the Jews in Eretz Yisrael never had. So he writes this on Zayin Sivan. When did the Six-Day War end? Chav Ches Iyar was, that's Yom Yerushalayim. So Chav Ches Iyar is the day they liberated Yerushalayim. So he's writing basically a week later. And he says, listen to this. We had a gathering of Rabbanim in Heichal Shlomo in Yerushalayim. We all got together. We had to discuss a few issues. And we were all sitting around. Bikarti Yachanim Kama Rabbanim Eitzel HaKotel HaMaravi HaMshuchar. And obviously, after our meeting was done, all of us were just so excited to be in Yerushalayim. So we went directly to the Old City from King George. And we walked through the Rova to get to the now liberated Old City. Somebody who was not there to experience what this felt like has no idea. I can't even describe it, he says. He said there were thousands of people who were all walking together to have the same experience. And their faces were shining from excitement. It was just an out-of-body experience. Hispalalu balat, he said, you saw them davening with such connection. Hodu la adon haniflos, and everybody was thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for this unbelievable miracle. Bein achogigim anelavim, he said, there were some people who were there who were certainly celebrating, but he said there were some, shekaru kriya kedina de gemara. They were standing there and they were dancing and they were davening and they were so excited, but then they ripped their garments. And he said, I looked at them and I said, this doesn't make sense. How can that be? Yes, it's true, the Gemara says, that you're supposed to rip Kriya when you see Yerushalayim Bechurbana, but does this look like Yerushalayim Bechurbana to you? And he turns to them and he says, I don't know. Bir'osi zos panisi libini, libinei livasi ve'amarti. I was with a group of rabbis who were in Heichal Shlomo. I turned to them and I said, Acharei hanitzachon alayveinu v'tzareinu shema'atim kamoso v'divrei yimei amenu. We have not had many moments like this in the history of our people. Any moment like this, v'acharei shechru shel Yerushalayim ha'atika, now that we have the old city back, and we have the opportunity to be where we are, ein l'kroa od b'bikurenu. This cannot be that we should still be ripping kriya. This is not Yerushalayim b'churbana. And he says, he stood up, and he made a shechiyanu b'shem b'malchus, and he said, not only we're not going to rip Kriya, we're going to make a Shechiyanu. We feel the gravity of the moment. We understand how blessed we are to be at this juncture in our lives and to be part of this unfolding of the history of the Jewish people. And he says, later on, I understand that I spontaneously said Shechiyanu. I started to think to myself, one second, does this really make sense? Did I do the right thing? Did I do the wrong thing? But he says, I wasn't even thinking at the time. I just said, this has to be the case. And Rav Goren was very famous for saying the same thing, where he argued that after 1967, no more ripping our garments when we go to the old city because this is not Yerushalayim Bechurbana. Later on, Rav Goren retracted his opinion, and the truth is that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes this as well, Rav Moshe Feinstein writes the same thing, that we still do rip Kriya when we go to the old city of Yerushalayim today. And why is that? Because in the end of the day, it's still Yerushalayim Bechurbana. Forgetting about the political mess that is brewing up in Yerushalayim. Obviously, that's one part of it. But kol zman we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, kol zman we don't have access to the Har HaBayis to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu the way we're supposed to, that's called Yerushalayim B'Churbana. It's very nice that it's being built up and that there are people moving in and that it's very, very heavily populated. But that doesn't help us for the fact that we're missing the Shechina, which is the most important part of what Yerushalayim represents. And that is why Rav Moshe believes, and Rav Shlomo Zalman felt the same, that even though the situation certainly has changed drastically, dramatically over the last 50 and 60 years, that still would not take away the halacha that obligates us to rip kriya when we go to the Makam HaMikdash. However, the question now becomes, does it make sense to rip kriya and say Shehecheyanu at the same time? Now this is a very interesting shaila. There was a tzaddik in the 1800s who moved from Germany to Eretz Yisrael. He was a contemporary of Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger, who was the Aruch HaShulchan, the Binyan Sion. He was a contemporary of the Ksav Sofer, a lot of the great Gedolim in Germany. But he was a pioneer. He was the first German rabbi at the time who made Aliyah. And he was very excited about this. And he writes about his experience. He says, Zachinu b'chai l'chodesh, on the 18th day of the month we had the schus, likanes le'ir ha'kodesh tibana v'sikonim b'mher v'yamenu, I came into the city of Yerushalayim, vayihi levavi ke'esh bo'eres, my soul, my heart was on fire. It was on fire not for the reason you think. It was on fire, he says, because I could not believe the state of disrepair, the state of ruin that Yerushalayim was in. I had this imagination that I was going to come to a beautiful city that was built up, and here I am in 1839, and Yerushalayim is in total disrepair, and the poverty is just unbelievable. And he says, I made a bracha dayin ha'emes, al rov ha'churva shalafanenu mamish b'chol tzad. I made a bracha of dayin ha'emes, as I looked around at how destroyed Yerushalayim was. At the same time, I made a bracha of Shehecheyanu on the hislavus hasimcha shezachinu lahagia li'er ha'kodesh. It's not a contradiction. I feel tremendously blessed that I'm here in Yerushalayim. This has been a dream of mine. I never thought it would come to a reality. Where at the same time, I made a dayin ha'emes as I walked around and saw the ruins of Yerushalayim. I saw the Jewish lives that were destroyed. I saw the homes that were toppled to the ground. I saw how the Arabs ransacked our Jewish brethren. And there was what to say dayin ha'emes about. It's a terrible experience. But there was also what to say Shehecheyanu about. And he writes in his own memoirs how this is something that he did. When he came to Yerushalayim in 1830s, he said both dayin ha'emes and Shehecheyanu at the same time. We already find a precedent for this. The Rashba writes, very fascinating halacha. It's hard to wrap our heads around. The Gemara says in Maseches Brachos, what happens if a parent passes away? So obviously we have an obligation to say a bracha of dayin ha'emes. Why dayin ha'emes? Because we're accepting the judgment of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's very difficult to accept it. We make a bracha dayin ha'emes. At the same time, the Gemara says, if a parent passes away, we make a dayin ha'emes, but we also got the Yerusha. Now that's very exciting. So again, it's inappropriate to celebrate the Yerusha at the time when you're preparing for a funeral. But the bottom line is that we're going to end up with the Yerusha. So the Gemara says, you can't ignore that. So you make a dayin ha'emes, while at the same time, you also make a Shehecheyanu. Why do you make a Shehecheyanu? Because you just won the lottery. So the Gemara does describe this kind of reality of making a Shehecheyanu and a dayin ha'emes all at the same time. In fact, the Shulchan Aruch gives another case. What if Yalda Ishto Zachar says that a woman who has a child, the couple is supposed to make a bracha of Shehecheyanu, or Hatova Ametiv. Why do you make a bracha? Because this is very exciting. It's a momentous time in our lives. Ask the Shulchan Aruch, what happens if Yalda Ishto Zachar, but the wife passes away at childbirth? So, on the one hand, the person's devastated that he no longer has his wife. On the other hand, there's some sort of excitement over the fact that he does have a child in the world. So the Shulchan Aruch says that would be an example of where the bracha of dayin ha'emes would be said at the exact same moment as the Shehecheyanu, which would be something very interesting to think about in our case. Where I would argue the point is that you're making those brachas on two different things. The dayin ha'emes is the fact that the woman passed away. The Shehecheyanu is on the fact that a child was born. That's not the same. Those are two different experiences. Again, they happen to have both come into reality at the same time. But I can argue that those are two different things. Do you ever find a case where at the same moment, when doing one activity, you make a bracha of dayin ha'emes and Shehecheyanu? Again, the case that the Gemara gives about the father passing away, that you're making the dayin ha'emes on the fact that he passed away, you're making Shehecheyanu on the fact that his bank accounts now are given over into your name. It's two different things as well. Do you ever find that for one experience, for one thing that happens on one occasion, you're going to make both? So I found something fascinating in the Mishnah Berurah today. I don't know what to make of it. I showed it to a few people. I don't understand what it is. But the Mishnah Berurah says, I'm reading you his lashon. Mi shehuchrach machmas aniyuso lakachas isha ashira. Right, to Shulchan Aruch. I'm sorry, the Mishnah Berurah quoting a Magen Avraham. There's a very wealthy girl in town who can't find a shidduch. And she really wants to get married. Who does she want to marry? At this point, doesn't matter. Just somebody. So she says, anybody who will marry me, I want some camaraderie. I want some companionship. I need somebody in my life. Whether he's good for me, bad for me, doesn't matter. I just need someone to marry me. Now, that's on one side of town. The other side of town, there happens to be a very poor young man who is just trying to make ends meet. And he can't get a job. And he can't figure out how to take care of himself. And he's very hungry. He's starving. He doesn't know what to do. He sees a big ad in the newspaper. Anybody who will marry me will take over my bank account. He says, I guess I don't really have a choice. What am I going to do? I'm starving. I'm hungry. I need food. I need money. I don't want to marry this woman. He goes on a date with her. Totally incompatible. She's not really interested in him either. But she wants to be with someone. So the Mishnah Berurah says, what happens? Well, the couple, we're not going to tell them what to do. They decide to go ahead with the shidduch, as strange as it is. He feels, at least I won't starve to death. She says, at least I won't be lonely for the rest of my life. Maybe we'll fight, so we'll buy a big house. He'll sleep upstairs and I'll sleep downstairs, I don't know. But at least we'll have each other. So whatever they do to work out the shalom bayis or not work it out, this guy is not happy to be in this marriage, but he's happy only because he's not going to starve to death. Writes the Mishnah Berurah, he marries this woman, shalo b'cheftzo. Not because he wants to, not because he likes her, but because he's pinned against the wall. He doesn't have a choice. It's either starving to death or marrying this woman who took out an ad in the newspaper that she'll take care of someone. Writes the Mishnah Berurah, Mevarech hatov v'hameitiv v'dayin ha'emes. Under the chuppah, the guy's going to take the microphone and make a bracha. Hatov v'hameitiv. Why? I'm really excited over the fact that I now have money to take care of myself. And I make a dayin ha'emes that I'm getting involved in a miserable marriage. Fascinating. That's got to be the most interesting wedding you'll ever be at. Right? But that's a case that's described in the Mishnah Berurah. What I find fascinating about it is, forget about the story. What I find interesting about it is, here you have something where at one moment, him marrying this woman, one action is being done, and it evokes two very different emotions. One emotion is, you know, it's great, at least I'll be taken care of for the rest of my life. So it's hatov v'hameitiv. The other emotion that is evoked from this union, from this marriage is, dayin ha'emes, this is awful. But both of them come from the same experience, and I thought that would be a very good parallel case to think about. Here you have somebody who bought a new article of clothing, they want to make a Shechiyanu, because they're excited about being in Yerushalayim. Now says the Kaf HaChaim and other Aforanim, when you have a suffix about Shechiyanu, buy a new article of clothing, it's going to make you excited, you can make a Shechiyanu, no problem at all. So she's going to do that. Now she said to me, but I'm going to make a Shechiyanu, and I'm going to rip Kriya. There are some who say you should make a Dayin HaEmes when you rip Kriya, when you go to Yerushalayim. It's exactly this case. Here you have somebody doing one thing, visiting Yerushalayim, and on the one hand, they feel a Dayin HaEmes, they feel a need to rip Kriya. On the other hand, they feel a need to say Shechiyanu. This is the most exciting moment in their year. So which one is it? Is that a stira? Is that a problem? The answer is no. The Gemara tells a story, I'll end in 2 minutes. The Gemara tells a story in the last daf in Makos about Rabbi Akiva. So the Gemara has become a very famous story where it says that a number of Tanaim were all traveling together and they come to the Churban Beis HaMikdash. It was right after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed and they pass Harat Sofim and they look over onto the Harabais and they see Shu'alim Holchuba. They see that there are animals roaming around the Harabais. What a disgrace. And all of them begin to cry and Rabbi Akiva is sitting there, he's laughing and he says, no, it's okay, everything will be fine. And nobody should worry about it. Don't get carried away. We'll all be okay. That's the story that the Gemara says. Ask the Marsha. Rabbi Akiva, it's very nice that you're just an optimist and you always see the good in everything. It's wonderful. It's really nice. It's a good way to live life and you'll always be happy and you'll never be depressed. It's great. Practical question, Rabbi Akiva. Doesn't the Gemara say we have an obligation to rip Kriya when we see the Churban Beis HaMikdash? So what are you doing? Answers the Marsha. Of course you rip Kriya. But at the same time that a Jew rips Kriya, he also has the ability to have the kind of mindset of Rabbi Akiva. There can be something painful going on in the world, something terrible that happened in my life, and I can find something positive in it. And that's something Rabbi Akiva taught us, actually about the Churban itself. That not always is a devastating experience, something that is just going to be left as simple, as one-dimensional as that. Says Rabbi Akiva, you have to look at it in different ways, think about it from different angles, consider it from different perspectives, and understand that although, yes, I rip Kriya, and I said Dayan HaEmes, and I feel the Churban, and it is terrible, there is such a reality of a person also seeing some kind of positive out of that very same experience. Similar to what we're describing here. It is possible for a Jew in their experience to have a Dayan HaEmes, Shechayanu moment that collide with each other, but both of them are appropriate responses, appropriate reactions to whatever it is that they are currently experiencing. So that is just an interesting story from this past week. Mirza Shem, next week we'll talk about something else. We'll see what happens this week.